Welcome to Sabrina Artel's Trailer Talk. I'll bring you all kinds of stories from all kinds of people. Whether it's a live public conversation and we're speaking from the kitchen table of my 1965 Beeline travel trailer, from the studios or on the streets, please sit back and enjoy the conversation right here this time every week.
I'm Sabrina and this is Trailer Talk, and I am so happy to welcome Nathaniel Whitmore back to this kitchen table conversation. In a previous episode, Nathaniel came to my home and he identified wild plants and spoke of this world of the natural environment that, of course, we're a part of and that surrounds us. And I have invited Nathaniel back to speak about something he's going to begin offering. He is an herbalist. He is a martial artist and practitioner. He is a wild mushroom and wild plant specialist, a wild crafter. Let's find out what that even means. And many more things that he has been deeply studying and engaged with and teaching for some decades now. And he is now going to begin offering tea tastings and share what the Japanese tea ceremony is, what the intent of it is. So we're going to begin this conversation there, which will lead us in to these many things I've mentioned. Welcome, Nathaniel.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. It's so great to continue our conversation, which absolutely fascinated me the last time. And I look at the wild plants around me in a different way, thanks to you.
Great.
So I want to start with, what is the aim of these tea tastings that you're going to be offering, and what is it?
So the tea tasting is meant to be an experience of having the tea, and we're going to explore actual tea, green tea, and different forms of tea and herbal tea as well, herbal infusions, herbal decoctions. Especially, I want to focus on the seasonal herbs that are available. So I will be using a seasonal theme, especially in regards to the ingredients using. And I'll be offering these all through the year, so spring, summer, fall. And then we'll talk also about medicinal herbs.
Yeah, so let me ask you, before we get into the medicinal herbs, what would be an example of some seasonal teas that you're referring to? It's early spring.
Yeah, so actually, even though it still looks pretty brown, nature is really coming alive. Just today, I noticed a few more flowers blooming. It kind of starts with the more or less dormant parts of the plants, like twigs. So a lot of the tree barks, like black birch, for instance, this is, especially as they wake up a little more, but this is the beginning of that season, that spring season for the different barks and or twigs. You know, you can just maybe take a branch and use some small twigs, and also many roots. So certain things like dandelion root and many bitter herbs that traditionally in the springtime, there's a big focus on the bitter flavor for cleaning out the liver. It's kind of a part of the spring cleanse concept in traditional medicine. And folk medicine, and there's many other roots that would be part of a perennial or a biennial plant that they've been waiting all winter and they're dormant. So as soon as the ground is thawed, they can be harvested. And then certainly as the season unfolds, we get into different herbaceous things that are beginning to grow.
So for this season now, this start of spring here, we are in the Catskills. You're based in Pennsylvania across the Delaware River from Sullivan County. where I live, but part of this region, this kind of
Right.
Catskills region and also the Delaware River Valley region.
Yes.
What would that black birch, for instance, you mentioned the bark or some branches, what benefit would that have for someone at this stage?
So black birch is a good example of something that has a basic daily use, or maybe you could say culinary use. So, of course, that's the flavor of birch beer and also root beer. So it's a very recognizable traditional flavor that people just enjoy. So it's a great example of something that can be used in small amounts just for the flavor. And then also it does have many medicinal properties. It's a diuretic and it benefits circulation. It has anti-inflammatory properties. In a word or a term, this would be an example of a blood cleanser, which is a traditional concept that, especially in the springtime, we focus on that idea of rejuvenating the blood and cleaning the blood of toxins that have built up. Wintertime, you have more starch and fat and less of those fresh ingredients. So then, when we use those herbs that are pungent or bitter or sour, we're trying to stimulate the detox. And it's also an old remedy for arthritis. Actually, root beer is kind of a blood cleansing formula traditionally, for
Oh,
especially for arthritis or just general inflammation in the body.
I love that flavor always.
Yeah. And the tea is a beautiful, you just take some of the twigs and it has that that classic color we associate with the root beers. It's this beautiful maroon tea. Very nice.
Oh,
It's one of my favorites
incredible.
too.
And then just an example as we move into, let's say, summer or another season, just so our listeners get an idea of some of these teas that you're referring to.
So in the kind of general seasonal consideration, we consider summer to be that full bloom time. So we think of the like peppermint and certain things like that might already be starting, but their flavor is not strong. It's not complete. But when they're in bloom, the essential oil content is highest in the plants. So there's many different flowers, red clover and the different mints and many of the different garden flowers and wildflowers in the summertime.
This is fascinating. So, what are the five flavors of a tea tasting?
My background is largely rooted in Chinese medicine. There's many different systems, traditional systems that were holistic systems that included dietary theory and herbal theory. I like to point out when I do introduce this as a Chinese medicine concept that it does root into our own Western traditions. And even Chinese medicine roots back into Ayurveda, the yogic system, which so really it probably originated with the yogic five flavors. But in Chinese medicine, it evolved on its own and it's a way to understand the properties of foods and herbs and how they are going to affect the body. So we have salty. I'm going to kind of go in a standard order according to the typical diagram. You have salty, you have sour, bitter, sweet, and pungent. So pungent would be also, you could say, spicy. And it's a good example of how we then create subdivisions. So the spicy or acrid or pungent flavor is a general flavor, but then we have the spicy as in cayenne. We have spicy in those relatives. We have the allium spicy of the onion and garlic. We have the aromatic quality of pine and those kinds of trees. Of the mints and many of the mints are aromatic. So within that basic concept, we can break it down. And we would say pungent has a dispersing energy, meaning that it helps with circulation, It helps with mucus. It helps open the pores. Salty is the flavor of the trace minerals, so that has a nourishing quality, and it regulates the water. Sour, in many traditions, bitter would also be associated with the liver, but in Chinese medicine, the textbook says sour, and we look at that as an astringing and liver cleansing property. And then bitter also has a liver cleansing or a general detox. We say cooling property, so it reduces heat in the body, and it's more of a cleansing flavor. And then sweet is the main nourishing flavor.
Thank you, Nathaniel. I'm speaking with Nathaniel Whitmore, who is an herbalist, a wild mushroom and plant specialist, a Chinese medicine specialist, and many more things. We're actually speaking about tea tastings, which he has become very interested in sharing with us, with people, and diving into that knowledge. And I'm going to ask what might sound like a silly question, but how do you define tea? What do you mean with a tea tasting? Because my understanding is that they're all different kinds, right?
Right. So, I guess one of the main ideas behind these tea tastings is to have an educational experience. And I want people to more deeply appreciate tea and to understand all this terminology. Usually, and I start many different classes with this basic explanation. Tea, strictly speaking, is a plant. There's a tea plant, Camellia sinensis. So technically, when we say tea, we should be talking about green tea. White tea is from the same plant. You could say yellow, even red tea sometimes, or black. There's many different, even beyond those colors, there's many different kinds of descriptive terminology, but it's all the same plant.
And would that be true of matcha as well, which is a.
Matcha is a powdered green tea. So yes, that is still the tea plant. Now, when you say to your guest, "Do you want some chamomile tea?" There's really no problem with using the word like that. It's just that technically, tea is referring to that plant. When we talk about the herbs, so herbal tea would be more properly, generally, either an herbal infusion, which means that the herb is steeped, and that's sometimes called a tisane, although you don't really hear that word in common usage, or an herbal decoction. And a decoction is when the herbs are actually simmered, so it's cooked down a little bit. So tea would be an infusion of tea.
I see. So, why have you decided to focus now on tea tastings and even these forms of, I guess, herbal infusions? Because for many years you made tinctures and you
Right.
advise people in that kind of way. So I'm curious what this direction that you're in now and really the many things that you study that have to do with the mind-body connection. What is it that you've discovered that you want to share with us about a ritualized sort of practice? And let's go to the Japanese tea ceremony now, because you've mentioned that as part of this and what your connection to that is.
Let me just start by going back to an earlier question, that term wildcrafting, because that's where I started, with the wild foods and the wild herbs. And in the beginning, I was in that term, especially back then. I think maybe people used the term foraging more back then. Maybe wildcrafting, we were saying that instead of foraging, meant we gathered the herbs, but I guess the crafting comes in when we're taking those herbs and making tinctures. So that's why herbalists often will say wildcrafting when they're gathering the herb from the wild.
And
And
what do
then
you think about that now? Yes. What?
about wildcrafting.
Well, yes, and that idea of forging, because I feel that you've also come to some conclusions for yourself about that.
Yes, I've done a bit of a 180 in regards to kind of a basic feeling. I remember when I first started, I believe it was the Peterson's Guide to Wild Edible Plants, and they said people are asked, are you worried about teaching about plants because they'll be over harvested? And the author's response was, it's not people foraging that's really harming the wild plant populations. And for many years, I assumed that philosophy. I didn't feel my feeling was that the more people understood, the more awareness we have of the environment and of the plants, the more we will be likely to protect them. Whereas if we don't know them, if we don't know their names, if we don't use them, we really don't miss them when they're gone. But since that time, in 20 years, I've witnessed many plants suffer dramatically. And it's not really directly related to wildcrafting, but or foraging. But now I am more concerned about the impact of foraging, as especially in an area like this where the population is growing so rapidly. If people come into an overharvested area, they might overharvest.
Nathaniel, what would be some examples of some of these plants that you've seen harm come to or that you have concern?
Well, I could give a long list, but particularly native plants. Trillium would be a great example. Trillium is one of the few plants that you could eat like a lettuce that just grows in the wood. But you hardly ever see it anymore because the deer are eating it and it's just not around. There's many, many examples though. And it really depends on the area. I could go in a given area and then see that a lot of plants are not there that probably just a few years ago were.
And
Even
some of this has
just
to do
about
with the
anything.
environmental conditions and others, though, does it have to do with people foraging them? And
You know what? The more that I think about it and observe, the more that I realize that there's so many reasons. It's so hard to pinpoint it. Even the right now, I'm going to say it's the weather. And like, for instance, one thing I noticed is the deer are digging up the forest floor a lot right now. And so maybe in most winters, the ground is frozen. They don't have access to it. But as as their food diminishes, they just go deeper and deeper. So then you get a warm winter, and now the deer are actually digging up roots. So this is gonna, every year there's like maybe something different that can throw off another set of plants. And then little by little, there's kind of a decline.
yes. Thank you for explaining that. So, how does this then going back to, so you're kind of addressing these changing times and you're changing philosophy around foraging, wild crafting of the plants that
Yes.
surround us?
I
So,
don't
how has
know.
this moved? I want us to get into the Japanese tea ceremony,
Yeah,
right?
I'm gonna go back a little bit. That was a little bit of a sidetrack from your question earlier about how I've come to this point from these years of teaching. And what I was saying is that I started off teaching foraging, and then slowly, I got more involved with working as an herbalist, consulting with people, and teaching people how to use the tinctures and teaching people about the plants. And I just got more and more into the academic part of herbalism and the study and teaching more advanced classes. Now, what I've come to at this point, there's many reasons I've come to this point, but philosophically, I'm very interested in something that is accessible. So I could talk about herbs all day long, but I realize that people, even people that are in advanced studies, they really only want to go so far, learn so much, and then maybe they're satisfied. And I want to come back to very simple, basic things that can be more accessible to people so that everybody can benefit from this simple stuff.
So you're talking about then tea as a medicinal or a medicine to help us, as some sort of food even, right? Kind of if we're talking and I want to get to the ceremony though before our conversation concludes, because this Japanese tea ceremony is something that you have knowledge about and that you'll be offering, and it is a spiritual practice. So I'd like to hear about this connection, because what I have learned about your own practices is that they completely intersect. They're not separate. They're holistic. So I'm interested in learning more about that.
My introduction to the Japanese tea ceremony is through the study of the Japanese sword. And I kind of, you could say, stumbled into the world of martial arts. I wasn't, especially particularly the sword, I wasn't thinking, I'm just going to start studying the sword. But through meeting my teacher and then studying the karate, I then got open to the sword, and I started to understand the beauty of the art, which in post-war time particularly, the sword became a spiritual practice. And then in visiting Japan, I met a teacher there, and his sword style connects to the castle, the samurai castle times in the town. And the castle lord was also a big fan of the tea ceremony. It was a big thing in that time in Japan, and it was part of the practice. So I've actually had very little exposure to the tea ceremony, but in Japan, it's people interested in the traditional culture might study at classes, and it's a very serious study. And mostly I just went to some tea houses with my teacher, and you can buy a cup of matcha and you can sit in the tea room. And then there's a beautiful garden, and a lot of these places we've gone were historic sites. And it was really something that I just got a taste of through my teacher. But that's the connection.
And this is personal for you as well, right? Your connection to Japanese culture?
Yes. And Zen has always been a main interest of mine. And the practice of tea ceremony is considered to be a practice of Zen. So it's about developing mindfulness and being present in the moment. And I guess I feel like today we have the word Zen has become very popular. It's had its ups and downs, I guess, but it's recognized. And I think it's a kind of a generally interesting topic to people, but also we're getting more involved with media and the phones and busy lives. So I feel like, there's really maybe some salvation in this simple act of being able to be single-pointed when you're having a cup of tea.
Nathaniel, thank you so much for everything you're sharing with us. Before we conclude, and I hope we continue with these conversations, is there anything you want to share with our listeners about the tea tastings that you have started to offer?
The tea tastings are the culmination of my experience with the herbs and teaching. And I'm attempting to integrate these different aspects of tea into an experience that's accessible to many people. We're going to be exploring different kinds of tea, the experience of the different tastes. It's a little bit of theory about the properties and nutritional benefits. And at the same time, just culturing an appreciation for tea and a real simple experience in nature having a peaceful and enjoyable social experience.
And Nathaniel, why do you think that is important during these times at this moment?
I think that that simple, relaxing atmosphere of the tea ceremony is really deeply nourishing. It's going to give us the ability to reflect and really just take time to integrate and to come to ourselves, take a deep breath, and enjoy that tea and that experience with people.
Thank you so much, Nathaniel.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. I've been speaking with Nathaniel Whitmore, who's an herbalist, a martial artist, a wild mushroom and plant specialist, a Chinese medicine practitioner, and is now offering tea tastings. And I'm so happy that we've been talking about that. On April 28th, he will be offering a tea tasting at Worker Bee Community Acupuncture in Milford, Pennsylvania. And to reach Nathaniel, to find out more, if you'd like to be on his mailing list, please text him on his cell phone, 845-428-8232. 845-428-8232. Thank you again, Nathaniel.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. I've been speaking with Nathaniel Whitmore, who is an herbalist, martial artist, wild mushroom and plant specialist, a wild crafter, an expert in Chinese medicine and various holistic modalities. We've been speaking about his upcoming tea tastings and Japanese tea ceremonies that he will be leading throughout the community.
From the kitchen table out on the road, I'm Sabrina Artel.
Donations to support Trailer Talk, now celebrating its 20th anniversary, are always gratefully received. You can find a link to make your tax-deductible donation at trailertalk.net.
Thanks for joining me for Sabrina Artel's Trailer Talk. The music for the show, Patti Smith, People Have the Power. Trailer Talk is produced by Sabrina Artel. For more information, please visit trailertalk.net. Special thanks to WJFF Radio Catskill and the numerous people who have donated their time, resources, and conversations to make Trailer Talk possible. Thank you all who joined me in these conversations. I'm Sabrina Artel. Safe travels.